We're missing one member to officially have a quorum, but we're going to get going on time. And as soon as that member, whoever it may be, enters the room, I'll officially call the meeting to order. We have a number of agenda items today, and we're going to start out with, we've invited both Mr. Michael and a representative from the Attorney General's office to answer any questions members might have regarding the memos related to the possibility of changing the constitutional question and or the ballot language. Mr. Michael, if you'd like to step to the stand, your first up, as I promised, as I know you're a very busy man. And members, copies of both memos are in your packet because I figured you probably wouldn't remember to bring them back. Welcome to the committee. If you could just briefly go over your memo for us, and then we'll see if there's any questions for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to apologize first off because the memo that you have really was not a memo that was ever written to be distributed publicly. Rather, it was just an effort on my part to sort of do the research and organize my thinking. When I went to college, my freshman comp professor told me that the best way to make sure you're thinking straight is to write things down. And so really all this is sort of reflection of my thought processes. And I, quite honestly, had I thought I was ultimately going to distribute this, I probably would have changed the language in it somewhat. So I just want to apologize first off on that. Secondly, just to run through very briefly, because I know you're busy and you're going to do your markup, what my conclusions are. I went through and researched, and I concluded, as you've known if you've looked at the memo, that the legislature, in my judgment, does have the authority to modify a constitutional amendment which it has proposed and adopted on earlier in the session or in a previous session before it's actually got point where the voter, where the ballot has been prepared. And my thinking on that is derived from basically four factors. First of all, this, just as a matter of precedent in the House, this situation has actually, in the Minnesota House, this situation has come up before. In 1975, the legislature, as part of a transportation omnibus bill, did propose an amendment to the Constitution. And in 1976, there were some legislators, and I'm not sure exactly what the thinking was, but there were some legislators who were not satisfied with that and wanted to change the language. And so a bill was proposed in the House and passed the House of Representatives that would have amended the language of that transportation financing amendment. So I guess the first step in my thinking was the House has done this before. Now the Senate did not take that up and did not concur in it, so there's no sort of a legislative, there's no sort of overall precedence in the legislature, but this body has in fact done it before. I guess obviously this and the starting point in all of this is the language of the Constitution, which doesn't address it. First of all, it has a three-step process that outlines how the, I guess I should have started with this at the outset, but it outlines three steps that an amendment has to go through to get it passed. And that first is that it has to get majority approval of both bodies, then it's to be published by the reviser and voted on by the people. So the amendment really, the language of the constitutional approval process really doesn't say whether the legislature has authority to modify a previously adopted amendment, but it also doesn't say that it doesn't have that authority. So, and there are no court decisions in Minnesota, so this is an open question. My second point was that in looking at judicial opinions in other states, this has come up in a handful of other states, and most states have procedures that are similar to that in the Minnesota Constitution. All of the courts in other states that have looked at this, I think there are five or six cases, some of them are not really analogous And the reasoning of those cases is not quite honestly very good. But all of them that have looked at it have concluded that the legislature can modify a previously adopted constitutional amendment. The best case, the one that's a circumstance that's very similar to the situation you're dealing with now, is from the state of Maryland, a suburban case. And basically the court went through and said, well, similarly, the Constitution in Maryland does not prohibit this. It doesn't authorize it. But based on a sort of common sense reading and the fact that it avoids the problem that the court was concerned about of submitting potentially conflicting multiple amendments, it concluded that the legislature could modify the amendment. So basically the second factor in my thinking was that all of the state courts that have looked at this decision, that looked at this issue, have concluded the legislature does have the power to modify constitutional amendments. Now, then I looked at attorney general's opinions. There are two, and of course, the Minnesota attorney general's opinion came out after I went through this and wrote this up, but there are two attorney general's opinions that reached the opposite result in California and Washington. And those decisions, similarly to the Minnesota opinion, basically look at the literal language of the Constitution and says the legislature is not explicitly authorized to do this, so it doesn't have the power to do it, is basically the way they arrive at that. And the Washington and California constitutions have a special feature that the Attorney General and the courts in those states characterize as a mandatory and prohibitory provision that essentially says in construing this document, everything that it says you're supposed to do is considered to be mandatory, and if you're not given the authority, it's prohibited. And that, in the Washington Attorney General's view, was a critical element in rejecting these court decisions in other cases. The National Conference of Legislatures also has surveyed other state practices, and all of the states that responded to that survey, not many, but there are, I think, five states that responded, said that in the past their legislatures have amended or changed or withdrawn constitutional amendments that had been submitted to the constitutional officer with the authority to publish the proposed amendments. And in one of those cases, it was litigated in a trial court, and the trial court also, consistent with the appellate decisions, held that the Oregon legislature had authority to modify a previously submitted constitutional amendment. So the practices in other states are consistent with this. Finally, to get around to the sort of, given that we don't have explicit constitutional language that resolves this one way or another, in my mind it came down to the question of, well, what did the founders of the Constitution really intend when they wrote this fairly simple procedure for the legislature to propose constitutional amendments? Did they mean to exclude the ability to modify something that had been adopted, or did they think that in authorizing approval of amendments, that also implicitly that included the authority to change or modify them until they reach the point where it's too late to do that because the ballot has been prepared or is simply not practical? To me, in common sense, said yes, that probably is what was intended. And I think some of this, how one analyzes this, depends upon how you view the role of the legislature in this process. Is it to be a robust rule, or a robust role that the legislature has the maximum opportunity to essentially get it right, as I would put it, in framing the proposed constitutional amendments? Or is it a narrow role that the legislature really is acting as an agent of the people, and at any time you get the necessary majorities in both bodies, that then they're somehow entitled or have an reasonable expectation that they should be allowed to vote on that? In my mind, and maybe it's because I've worked for the legislature for 30 years, have a sort of view that the legislative role should be an expansive role, and that the founders really intended to give the legislature sort of the maximum ability to propose and modify constitutional amendments until it was time to actually submit them to the voters at the and prepare the ballot. And I think the Bergen Court's point about not submitting multiple constitutional amendments that can be conflicting is also a valid practical point. And I know for just from being moderately familiar with Washington and California, this is a feature that they have to deal with. They have conflicting amendments that are occasionally submitted. And the Washington Attorney General's opinion says that the legislature can specify if both of them pass, which one controls. I'm not sure what the basis is for that, but that's routinely done. So in essence, just to sum up, based on the precedent in other states and practices in other states, practice in the Minnesota House, I concluded that the legislature does have the power to amend the constitutional amendment that you passed last year. Now, I think the interesting question is, now that you have a contrary opinion from the Attorney General, where does that leave you institutionally? I'm not going to express any views on that, but if you want to ask me about it, I might have some thoughts.
All right, thank you. If I might take care of a little housekeeping here, I'll officially call the meeting to order. The first item on the agenda is the roll. Ms. Slott will note the roll. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. We have minutes from the Tuesday, April 4th and Thursday, April 6th meeting. Representative Larson moves approval of those minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. All right, members, are there any questions for Mr. Michaels? Representative Abrams.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Michael, I'm going to take the bait and maybe set up the hypothetical. If the legislature passed a conflicting language to the language previously passed, it would then go to the Secretary of State, and then the Secretary of State would ask the Attorney General for his opinion. I'm not familiar with an instance in which a Secretary of State has failed to follow an Attorney General's opinion as to how to execute the laws of the state. And then somebody who would be dissatisfied with that course of action would have an opportunity to file a lawsuit, which I would think would be venued in Ramsey County, not Hennepin, Ramsey County. And then there'd probably be a petition to go to the Supreme Court to assert jurisdiction. Could you kind of, in your mind, at least give your view as to what a time frame might be to resolve a situation like that, particularly looking at the importance and length of the tobacco litigation? They've had the case now for 3 months, and they just heard oral argument yesterday. How would you see the litigation path,
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, I'm not being a litigator and not being involved in court actions very often, I'm probably not the best one to answer that. But under normal circumstances, I think it could not be resolved. But on the other hand, I know that the court has tended to expedite these kinds of things that affect the ballot. For example, think back to the 1992 gubernatorial election. I know that they sort of very quickly responded, if I recall correctly, to that issue about who was the Republican gubernatorial candidate. And I suspect that in this instance, if litigation ensued, that they would also fairly promptly try to resolve it. There are all sorts of interesting questions as the hypothetical that you outlined were to come to pass, how this were, for example, I think, if, for example, the Secretary of State were to put the new language on the ballot and someone were to sue, which probably... it's hard to know how likely that is. Then the Attorney General, having already expressed opinion that the legislature does not have the power to do this, I assume would not be the one that would be best situated to defend that case. And so, but like you say, I can't imagine the Secretary of State not taking the advice of the Attorney General. So, but on the other hand, it might be that they would have a situation where they feel that both questions should go, both versions should go on the ballot. I'm not sure. It's very unclear. And I guess the other thing that I would point out is we do, the way the constitutional amendment that passed last year passed is not totally, we do have an Attorney General's opinion from 1994 that says that you can do that. But it's also not impossible that someone will say, that's not so clear and we're going to challenge that. So you could have a lawsuit on that too.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael, you mentioned in here, just before your conclusion, the basic question remains, what is the nature of the role of the legislature and its power in the constitutional amendment process? And I know that amending the Constitution is not something not to be taken lightly, but would you have any thoughts or ideas of having something in the Constitution to help the legislature in addressing such a situation as amendments going to, as far as that people could agree to?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it sure would have been nice in this circumstance if the language of the Constitution was clear so that we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it. But unfortunately, that's not the case, and when you're dealing with the Constitution, it's always going to ideally be written in general language that will have to be, you know, that's always going to raise these kinds of interpretive problems. And Minnesota's got actually a fairly good constitution in that sense. When I look at constitutions in other states that look more like a Napoleonic code that goes on for chapters, it seems, in great minutiae, I don't think you want to go there. But yes, it would, I mean, in an ideal world, it sure would have been nice if this, you know, were more clearly resolved.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Michael, I'm curious what your opinion is of the situation that we have, what the legislature is defined as in terms of membership. We have a little bit different membership this year of the legislature than we had in the previous year. Does that impact how the court might look at this? Because a different, slightly different group of legislators approved this ballot initiative than would be approving a second one or a change to that one.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, I guess that's true because there have been a couple of resignations and members replaced. I don't think that would be relevant, though, because it's the same legislature. And you can imagine, you know, those kinds of changes actually happen during the course of sessions. So, for example, if during the session last year, the House passed this in March, let's say, and somebody had resigned and was replaced by somebody later, and then the Senate concurred in it, and it went on to the, you know, in the normal course of events, got sent to the Secretary of State. I can't imagine that even if it passed by a one-vote majority, that anybody would have said that it didn't get the necessary majorities. I don't think that that's a factor, but I hadn't really thought about it until you raised the question.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much for your time. And now I have from the Attorney General's Office, Chris Iden. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Chris Iden, and I'm Chief Deputy Attorney General.
And if you might want to say a few words about the letter and the opinion and then stand for questions, we would appreciate it.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
What we had looked at when this question was presented to us is the language of the Constitution, and as Mr. Michaels mentioned, the Constitution basically indicates that the legislature can propose amendments, and once they're approved by the legislative body, they're to be published and then shall be submitted to the voters. There aren't any cases in Minnesota that expand or give any guidance on the interpretation of those provisions. What we did in looking at an interpretation of that provision was look at previous opinions issued by our office on similar subjects, and some of these opinions, which are referenced in the current opinion, go back for 50 years. The most recent one addressed the situation as to whether a gubernatorial veto of a bill that includes a proposed constitutional amendment also includes a veto of the amendment, and we concluded that it does not. And the reason we concluded that is because all the steps required in the Constitution to present that proposed amendment to the people had already taken place. So there was no authority of the governor to veto a proposed constitutional amendment. Similarly here, all the steps have been taken to have that proposal go to the people. The proposal's been approved by both houses, it's been published, and now the only thing left is for the public to vote on it. And when you look at the language of the statute, the Constitution, it does say that once this passage has occurred, the amendment shall be submitted to the people of the state. And I think there are many cases as well as statutes that do indicate that the word shall is mandatory. And so the way we looked at this is the legislature has taken all the steps that it could take. It's out of its hands, and now it's time to go to the people.
Any questions? Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, just a couple. I could ask a lot, but first, your opinion, or the opinion of the Attorney General's office, first, was written pursuant to statute in which the chair of a committee can ask for an opinion, because last night in the Ways and Means Committee, a bill author was asked what authority the Attorney General had to issue opinions to the legislature, because there was one on another bill. So I would like you to affirm that you do have the power to issue opinions. And second, I have gotten a letter, as I think every member of the committee has, in which from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, in which the fact that it was signed by Ken Rashke, the Assistant Attorney General, who happens to be a fine Assistant Attorney General, and that somehow him signing the opinion is different than the Attorney General signing the opinion. So could you talk about, A, the role of your office in responding to legislative requests, and B, does it make any difference who signs a letter that the last page says, in our opinion?
Ms. Seiden.
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 8, our office does have the authority to provide opinions to Senate and House committees, and it was pursuant to that authority that we received the request from the chair and rendered an opinion. With regard to who signs the opinion, I'm not aware of any provision which would make this opinion an opinion that's not signed by the Attorney General any less of an opinion than one that is signed by the Attorney General. The other thing I would point out is that our opinions are advisory. So we can advise this committee, we can advise state officials, we can advise the Secretary of State what we believe the appropriate interpretation of the law is, but at the end of the day, it is just advice. But this does constitute the advice of the Attorney General.
Thank you. Representative Abrams.
Second question, Ms. Iden. Assume that the legislature passes different constitutional language this year. I think it's a fair assumption that the Secretary of State will ask for your opinion, and then the Secretary of State will either follow your opinion or not follow your opinion. I don't know of a circumstance in which the Secretary of State has not followed the opinion of the Attorney General. How would you view what the litigation, if somebody decided to sue, what the litigation pattern would be, and what a time frame would be particularly given the interest in this issue, and that there would probably be a number of interested parties who would want to intervene in the litigation. How would you kind of time it out, and how would it be different from a ballot access case, which at least to me is, you know, a candidate ballot access case, which I wrote my third year paper in Harvard Law School on, is usually fairly easy and fairly straightforward, and does not engage a lot of intervention, et cetera, and could be argued in an hour, and the briefs are fairly easy to put together. How would you view the difficulty of the litigation, what sort of schedule that would entail, particularly given the interests of interveners?
Ms. Seiden.
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, first addressing the point that you kind of based your question on, and that is if the legislature were to approve different language than is currently to be proposed to the public. And I would need to clarify that, or at least indicate one of my assumptions. I'm assuming you're suggesting that the current language would be modified rather than having this body propose a separate amendment that may be different from the first. Okay. Based on that assumption, it's hard to say how quickly the litigation would go forward. As you mentioned, on ballot access questions, the Minnesota Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. I don't know if this would fall within the ballot access, and you're shaking your head that it would not. Assuming that's the case, and it goes into district court to begin with, the process can be quite lengthy. I assume that if there were a challenge, the party challenging it would seek some sort of injunctive relief, but litigation just takes time, and it would likely go on for months. Whether it would be longer than 2-3 months, I can't say, but it can be a very lengthy process.
So, Madam Chair.
President Abrams.
Assuming that we had a Supreme Court that really wanted to hear this case, I mean really wanted to, and let's even assume further that the parties were able to stipulate as to facts, at least I would envision at least 30 days in order for the Supreme Court to take the case and to issue whatever temporary orders would have to be issued. There would probably be another 15 to 30 days in which interested parties could intervene, and there would be a briefing schedule, and probably another 30 days for oral argument, and then afterwards. So at least I would envision, even if you had a court that really wanted to get in, a Supreme Court that wanted to get involved, a minimum of 90 days between the filing of the lawsuit and the time in which the Supreme Court could hear oral arguments, and then there would be some period in which it would take to write the opinion. But would 90 days basically be a pretty good guesstimate if the Supreme Court were interested in hearing this case?
Ms. Seiden.
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, I don't think that would be an unreasonable estimate.
Any additional questions? I have one. If the legislature says, "Okay, we're gonna agree with the Attorney General. We're not going to touch the language that's currently proposed, but rather we're going to offer a second question that offers what is referred to as the hard 60-40, that 60 for roads, 40 for transit, which in reality is likely not in conflict with the no greater than, no less than language, and they both pass, then would you view that the hard language would then solidify that position in the Constitution?
Madam Chair, I would suggest that if you're going to do that, that in the actual Second Amendment that you indicate that, you know, if there's any uncertainty as to which amendment takes precedence, that this amendment with the hard and fast 60-40 split is the one that would prevail in the event that both would prevail.
All right, thank you. Any additional questions for Ms. Iden? Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. All right, members, we're going to move to consider two bills, and then we'll put together an omnibus bill. And what I'm going to do at this point is take up House File 3805, Representative Vandeveer, who I just saw and is coming. And I understand that an amendment was passed out, and staff, if you'll help me, it is an A2 amendment. My understanding is that this A2 amendment would reflect a resolution between Representative Vandeveer and MnDOT. If you'd like to explain your bill, and then we'll ask for MnDOT to come to the stand to express their thoughts on the A2 amendment. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam
and
Chair.
And if I might, I'm sorry, I would like to move consideration of House File 3805.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, we left the committee with the instructions to come back with an agreement, and we have the A2 amendment, which I believe reflects, and MnDOT can talk about it. I think they are in agreement. Essentially, we reduce the number of signs and by one. The Senate, of course, meanwhile, passed the bill as written to their general register. So this is the amendment we have, which is different than the Senate. This has less signage in it.
And Representative Vandeveer, this would be to recognize the loss of life and the sacrifice and certainly the contributions of Officer Silvera, who was killed on the freeway in the course of doing his duties. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. There was quite a chase going on, and some indication that it could have been intentional and on the part of the perpetrator. And nevertheless, the officer took great risk in throwing out the stop words and in doing that action, lost his life. So this is to just recognize this segment of the highway as the Sean Silvera Memorial Highway.
All right, and then I'd like to move the A2 amendment. I would ask that somebody from MnDOT come to the stand to state their position on this amendment. Mr. Dean, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Aaron Bredin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I know that Ms. Parker has been working with Representative Vandeveer. I believe it would be fair to state that the department still has concerns about placing memorial signs on interstates as a policy in general, but we've been working with Representative Vandeveer on a sort of compromise, and that's what the A2 amendment reflects.
And Ms. Bredin, are there any other places in the state in which we have these types of signs on the interstate system?
Madam Chair, to my knowledge, not directly on the interstate system. We do place memorial signs at rest areas, which is what the federal guidance suggests, which we suggested to Representative Vandeveer and Senator Polk and the Silvera family, and I believe it's Salina Lakes Police Department, but they were not satisfied with that approach, and so that's why we have the A2 amendment before us.
All right, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything that the federals I would say one way or another about this? There's no problem with interstates. I thought we signed on this. I thought we had some previous testimony to that effect.
Mr. Rudin.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that's correct. The federal guidance suggests that we do not place memorial signs on interstate. However, it's my understanding that it is guidance, that it's not a hard and fast law, federal law, for example, that it's strongly suggested by the Federal Highway Administration that we not do this because they don't want to see a proliferation of these types of signs on the interstates.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why are we on to three signs rather than one here? I think we're talking about three signs now with this amendment.
Representative Vandeveer.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, there are actually five locations designated in the bill.
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Are we talking about five signs then?
Good.
Representative Vandeveer, with the A2 amendment, there would still be five signs, is that correct?
That is correct.
And was that as originally proposed as well?
It was originally proposed as six. and the Senate passed it at 1-6. So, but we have agreement with them also, with the authors in the Senate, that this will be acceptable.
Members, are there any additional questions? Representative Wilson?
Are we making a decision on this right now, or is this just laid over for later?
My intent was to move this separate, as there isn't a financial consideration with it.
Madam Chair, there is no financial?
Representative Earhart, I've been told that the cost of these fines will be borne by the, there's a memorial fund or, Representative Vanderbilt, you want to help me out here?
That's correct, Madam Chair. I think the statute that's referred to in the bill requires that the family or whoever raised the funds privately to put the signs up, so there would be no cost to the state.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Rudine, you know, you're talking about 5 or 6 signs, and I have, it's a real problem with signs, and I think the proliferation of signs that we're talking about, when it gets to this point, if we're going to move something, I'd rather see 1 sign at the location than 6 signs. Would that be something be different? I think it's bad policy because we're going to, that sign's going to be there for a long time. The interstate's going to be there, and we hate to say it, there could be a lot of memorial signs on highways.
Representative Vanderveer.
Madam Chair and Representative, this is what we ended up with the Senate, as I said, after they passed the bill as it was introduced to the floor. It was in discussing this with the City of Lionel Lakes and with the family members, it was this was about, I think, is in order to get agreement with all of them that this would be the final product, this is what we ended up with.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that is the problem with these. These are such emotional situations, and particularly if the agreements and discussions are with family members. And it's why it always seems so important on these issues to have a clear state policy that we commit to, because then it kind of keeps us out of the difficulties of negotiating with families. I was a little surprised, too. I started making the changes on this amendment just to see if that substantially changed that number, and because I thought that's what you were bringing forward to us to make it more palatable, or what did I understand that you, what have we accomplished with the amendment?
And Representative Hausman, I don't know who you're directing that question.
Mr.
Rudine.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, we attempted to work with the family to reduce the number of signs, and as Representative Leader suggested, we felt if we were going to, rather than have a sign at one of the rest areas, have a sign directly on the interstate, we felt maybe what would be most appropriate was to have 1 sign exactly at the spot where the officer was killed, but it's my understanding that was not acceptable to the family, and so that's why they were willing to go from 6 signs to 5 signs, but not anything less than that.
Representative Vanderveer.
And point out, too, that Ms. Parker was with me as we discussed this with the family, and that's where we ended up.
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, as I recall in the past, we've had a number of these. And have you had some that we're not aware of? I'm really thinking, and I can appreciate and sympathize with the family, but, boy, you know, we've got a situation where I think a lot of them coming, we've had how many veterans or soldiers killed in Iraq, and some of these things, we could end up with signs just all over, and I think we've had a policy, and I'm a little reluctant, and I hate to say it that way, because I know this is a sacrifice from the family, but we are really opening a door when we do this.
Well, and Representative Leader, I was under the impression that MnDOT was okay with this, and that's why I asked them to come to the stand to speak to the A2 amendment and to hear that they still have concerns that concerns me as well. It's a very uncomfortable situation. Certainly we don't want to be disrespectful to the situation, but I add in the Transportation Policy Committee. We talked about the possibility of doing similar to what we did for State Trooper Ted Foss at the rest area. We, rather than send the bill to the floor, it was deadline day, a typical move to try and keep things alive and see if we can work them out. We moved the bill to this committee. Today, again, we're facing a deadline day. I'm not feeling real comfortable. I thought the MnDOT was okay with it. Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, again, I don't want to be disrespectful or stuff, but they have a police memorial on the Capitol grounds. We have a veterans memorial on Capitol grounds. We have others, too. I think to some degree, and again, it's a matter, there's federal policy and state policy, and we are, in a sense, and I don't want to really put it that way, but the family is usurping the policy and saying we're going to have it here, according to Representative Vandiver.
Well,
and it's really creating a problem in that sense, and I certainly don't want to be looking like I don't agree with this, but this is only today, and I can see just proliferation of signs coming on our highways, and I think it's a safety issue when you start getting that many signs, because nobody's, I don't know, I just hate to see.
Representative Vandiver.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I'm sorry if I gave you the impression that it was a demand. It was a conversation, and I think there was some issues with the Chief of Police who commented as to all the McDonald's signs and all the other signs that are on the road, and they didn't see why, these signs in what amounts to 25 miles. They don't see it as a proliferation, but if I characterized it as demand, I don't think that would be accurate. It was a conversation, and I don't believe it was a demand on the part of the family. That would be a mischaracterization if I did make it sound that way. I apologize.
Thank you, Representative
Anderson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Reedy, how many rest stops are in that area, whether northbound or southbound, on Highway 35E?
Representative Andrew. I'm sorry, Mr. Regine.
Madam Chair, and I believe southbound on Interstate 35, right before the split, there is a rest area at Forest Lake, which is where we were suggesting the appropriate place for the sign would be.
Representative
Anderson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Regine. Is there no northbound rest area at all?
Mr. Verdine.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I don't believe there is one in Forest Lake. I believe you have to get out several,
I believe it's north
miles,
of Paris.
Yeah, before there's a northbound rest area.
Well, Mr. Verdine, I was just thinking that would be, a compromise if there was a northbound as well as a southbound. Put a sign on either location there for the family. There's definitely some expressive concerns here by the committee on having too many signs on the road. So.
Any additional questions? Representative Earhart.
I'm going to make an amendment. I'm going to suggest wherever it fits that we do one sign at the point of the incident, however you may want to I really want to phrase that into the bill.
Representative Vandiver?
Madam Chair, would just say that I was instructed not to bring witnesses, but to bring an amendment that MnDOT had agreed to, and that's what we did. So I'm a little... I think maybe we should have... brought the witnesses and if we're going to do this, it might be helpful, but I'm not sure what the timelines are on being able to do that.
All right. Representative Earhart, we have the A2 amendment in front of us. And Mr. Bress, Representative Earhart would like to change the bill to allow for one sign at the accident site. And so if you might help us then some direction relative to considering Representative Earhart's amendment.
Madam Chair, members, if I could just have a minute to do up something to that effect.
All right. Is there any additional questions or concerns? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask Mr. Vanderbilt. Maybe I'm wrong, but wasn't that right at the incident? Didn't that happen right at an exit or a ramp?
Madam Chair, Representative Toledo, it happened, I believe, north a few hundred feet of, as I recall, of an overpass on 23.
Members, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to lay this bill on the table and see if we can work up some language and get the situation worked out. We'll let Mr. Bress work on some language, and we'll move on to the Nelson bill. So House File 3805 is laid on the table temporarily. The next item on our agenda will be House File 3276. Representative Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3276 for the author.
All right, thank you for that. Representative Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of Nelson District 17B, thank you, Representative Anderson. Members, I do have two oral amendments I would like Representative Anderson to make, if I could, please. On line 1.15, before the new language of vehicle, I would like to add the word registered.
Okay.
On line 1.22, amongst the new language, after the word you, I would like to add, comma, the registered owner. If Representative Anderson would incorporate that in his motion, I'd appreciate it, Madam Chair.
Yeah, so move.
All right, thank you. And again, members, on page 1, line 15, after the first the, insert registered. On line 1.22, after the word you, insert, comma, the registered owner, comma. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The oral amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we have people here for questions if you want, but we have flesh this out in transportation policy and since, and we, with all of the interested parties, including the towing people, the legal services advocacy people, the League of Cities, and MnDOT. We'll stand for questions.
Representative Nelson, if you please would take a minute to explain the reason this bill is before us, which would be Section 4 on page 2, and involves money and the Trunk Highway Fund, we would appreciate that.
I can do that, Madam Chair and members. With that section, there are sections, Section 3 and Section 4, deal with if a vehicle, and hypothetical, let's take a semi-tractor trailer, dumps it into a ditch. Towers need to, with this provision, pre-license with MnDOT, and MnDOT would set other parameters for that, but they would be on a call list then to come and retrieve that vehicle and take that to a place, it's a disabled vehicle, and move it to a place of safe keeping, and in pretty much 100% of the time will be a temporary location. But the importance of this is to get that disabled vehicle out of the right of way and traffic hazards. At some times, the tower may be taking on a load that would, for this temporary situation, exceed limitations that are typically put on towing. They say not beef to move it for transport. It would be a temporary basis only. But we felt, and the towers agree, that this extra permit allows MnDOT to keep track of who would be called in these instances, and it also covers if there is any additional cost to MnDOT.
All right, any questions, members? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to House File 3276 as amended? All right, seeing none, Representative Nelson, we will list bill on the table, and I expect that someone will take it up as a possible amendment to our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson and members.
3276 is laid on the table. All right, members, the next item that we have is putting together our omnibus bill. That would be House File 3761. I will move consideration of that, and we will use that as a base bill to build the omnibus bill. The first amendment that we would have would be the DE3 amendment, and if Mr. Walls would briefly go through the finance part of that amendment for the committee. And members of the sheets and overview are being passed out as well.
Madam Chair, would you prefer that I go through the bill or the spreadsheet?
Whatever your pleasure.
Madam Chair, I think I'll just briefly go through the spreadsheet, which is a summary of Article 1.
Yeah.
This spreadsheet, which is being handed out now, has a comparison of the governor's recommendations and what the House included for funding. And, Madam Chair, beginning on the top line, the House did recommend the additional $88 million for road construction, $5 of that for program delivery. That was similar to the governor. Madam Chair, the governor included $3 million for accelerated payback of the airports fund. That was not, the committee's target was not sufficient to fund that, so that was not included. Likewise, with the Moundsview reimbursement of $1.2 million that was in the governor's budget. The House did include $750,000 for the town road sign account. I believe that was a bill by Representative Magnus. The House bill includes trunk highway bonds for the Mankato headquarters, which was a governor's recommendation, but does not include at this time the $6.9 million for the Chaska truck station. Madam Chair and members, you'll find that the governor's proposal for $2.5 billion in trunk highway bonds tied to the constitutional amendment proposal that we had heard several days ago is included in this bill. $15 million of bonding for advanced right-of-way purchase was part of the governor's request in that bill. Those dollars are available in 07, and the rest of that funding is contingent upon passage of that amendment, so that is not shown here. Only the first $15 million for advanced right-of-way is included in the spreadsheet for the House proposal. Madam Chair, the governor requested $3.1 million for facial recognition technology to the Department of Public Safety. That was money from the general fund, and the committee did not have a target sufficient to fund that, so that was not included. The House does include $10.1 million in trunk highway bonding to repair the granite panels on the DOT exterior, and includes $41,000 in bond sale expenses to cover the bond sales for the advanced right-of-way, the exterior, and the Mankato headquarters. There was also a request in the governor's budget for a motor vehicle transfer fee correction, which would send some money currently. It was supposed to be sent last year to the general fund for fiscal 2007 and beyond. That beyond portion was not included in the House bill last year. The governor asked for a correction, and as of this time, that's not included in the House proposal. Madam Chair, I think that takes us through all the fiscal portions of Article 1 and 2 of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Walls. Are there any questions? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Walls, you say the Moundsview reimbursement is not in there?
I see it.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, that is correct. The department was requesting some additional funding that would be paid back to the Federal Highway Administration, which would then in turn be turned back to the Trunk Highway Fund to reimburse the state for, I believe, a parcel of land related to the Medtronic site. Since the committee did not have sufficient money in the target, that proposal was not funded. However, I of the understanding that it's not of an immediate nature, something that has to be done this year.
Any additional questions, Mr. Walls? Representative Hausman?
So, just to clarify, Madam Chair, this doesn't get in the way of whatever that Medtronic initiative was.
No, in fact, it gets in the way of MnDOT being reimbursed, but it can be done at a later date. Mm-hmm. And again, we didn't have that money in our target. So.
Madam Chair.
A Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did we have a target, a dollar amount?
Representative Leader, the targets were approved, or actually I think there needed to be a motion to reject them, and that was Thursday evening, I think, following either Eminent Domain or whatever the second bill was that we did. The Gophers. And there was no motion made to reject the targets, and so our target was $750,000. And then you can see Article 3 is just an effective date. So Mr. Walsh went through what was contained in Articles 1 and 2, and again, this is a shell for our omnibus bill. So if I might, I'd like to move the DE3 amendment if there aren't any questions. Is there anybody in the audience who'd like to speak in opposition to the DE3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The DE3 amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Abrams, would you like to move your amendments at this time?
Yes, I think we should take the A14 amendment, and this amendment, I believe, is being also offered by Representative Leader. So I will move the amendment, and Madam Chair and members, the AMD 14 amendment is the bill that I presented to the committee the other day dealing with creating the transit fund account at 40% and the highway user trust would get 60%. The constitutional amendment would not be changed, but the language for the constitutional amendment would be changed to, shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended so that after June 30th, 2011, all revenues from the existing tax on the sale of new and used motor vehicles are dedicated to highways and public transit. Madam Chair, we are in the situation we're in, and how we got there is a lot of water over a lot of dams. But the fact is that we're expected to get something done. And the current constitutional language, according to the Attorney General's office, is going to go forward. So what this amendment does is give some statutory comfort to those who want 40% to mean 40% and 60% to mean 60%. It makes the constitutional question easier to understand. And most importantly of all, it will eliminate voter confusion if we try to change the constitutional language as is in the Attorney General's opinion. And I am concerned that if we try to change the constitutional language, that it won't be until September, until the Supreme Court would finally, at best, in which the Supreme Court would issue a final order in the case. More to the point, this amendment, I think, is backed by close to 400 organizations or businesses or other groups that literally have nothing in common except that they want to have a broad-based funding source for roads in transit in Minnesota. They don't have the same law firm representing them. They have literally 375 different representatives at the table, each with a different perspective, and they've come to this to the conclusion that this is the way to go. So, Madam Chair, I understand that emotions are high, that there are some who are attempting to fuel the flames, but I really do believe that this is the middle ground in order to be able to move Minnesota ahead in a rational way, which will reflect well on the legislative process and on the people who have been involved in this issue for many years. So I'd like to thank Representative Leader. We haven't always agreed on every aspect of transportation funding, but I think that given the situation we're in, this is the best way to move forward, and I would ask for your yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Abrams. Is there anybody else that would like to speak or have questions on the A14 amendment? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the A14 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Abrams, it's my understanding that you also need to move the A4 amendment in conjunction with this, and currently the A4 amendment is drafted to the DE2 amendment.
Madam Chair and members, this is an important amendment. This deals with the sales tax on leased vehicles. Am I correct, Madam Chair? Or which is this one?
I'm sorry, Representative Abrams. I was told that the A4 amendment was necessary to clarify some language associated with the transfer of the money.
This is, Madam Chair and members, this is basically the phase-in of the transit money that is necessary in order for the A14 amendment to work.
Is there any questions on the A4 amendment? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the A4 amendment? Mr. Barras, it's my understanding that you might have an amendment to this, the A4.
Madam Chair, members, yes, I do. The reason this amendment is before you now is because currently with the DE3 and the AMD14 amendment that was just adopted, there are two versions that are slightly conflicting in the deposit of MVEST revenues and how that's allocated. This amendment resolves the conflict. That's not so much conflict, it's just difference in language. So I would recommend incorporating a change to this A4 amendment so that on page 1, line 1, it is H3761DE3. And then on page 1, line 3, it would read page 5, delete section 5.
Yeah.
And then additionally, there would need to be a deletion of the language that's in the AMD 14 amendment.
Be 2.5 to...
Yes, that would be deleting lines 2.5 to 2.36 and lines 3.1 to 3.3 on the AMD 14 amendment.
That's my amendment, Madam Chair.
Good job, Representative.
I was here till 1 o'clock in the morning drafting it.
Okay. Just for clarification purposes, what we're going to do is on the A4 amendment, page 1, line 1, DE2 now becomes DE3. Line 3, insert the numeral 5 following the word page and the numeral 5 following the word section. And then what we have to do is add, I'm assuming, a new line 2.24 to delete lines 2.5 to 2.36 of the AMD 1-4 amendment. And lines 3.1 to 3.3 of the AMD 14 amendment. Mr. Bress, do we have that correct?
Madam Chair, members, yes, that's correct.
All right, any questions? Anyone want to speak in opposition to that? Very technical. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Okay, Representative Adams, I think you have one more, which would be your House File 3127, which we will ask to be incorporated, in that we didn't put these together all as amendments per se, but this was a bill that was laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Yes, Madam Chair, I almost was speaking to that. Madam Chair and members, as you may recall, House File 3127 was the bill which define the upfront payment of sales tax on leased vehicles as motor vehicle sales tax. I'm having, as you may recall, at the committee hearing, I asked MnDOT to show what the effect that that amendment would have on the governor's proposed bonding against the new MVES dollars that are in the constitutional amendment, and that's being passed out right now. And what you'll see are basically two things, or really three things. One, the area of benefit of the program is larger and the area of cost is smaller, and over the period of time that this would be in effect, instead of having a $120 million deficit to the trunk highway fund, there would be a $480 million surplus to the trunk highway fund. So just by calling it what it really is, which is a motor vehicle sales tax, we have more money for roads, we have more money for transit, and we solve a pretty large chunk of the problem under the governor's proposal, at least as far as some of the concerns that were raised by committee members. So I think it's a pretty good deal, and I would urge your support.
And members, just for clarification purposes, in your packets, as the bill is introduced, attached to that is the delete all amendments. And so what we're
moving to delete all amendments.
What we're moving is the delete all amendment. The bill actually is in the tax committee right now, as it has tax implications, obviously. But Representative Abrams thinks this is such a good idea, and I would hope most of us would concur it would be a good place to put it in the transportation finance omnibus bill. Is there any questions? Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, to Representative Abrams, this is the bill that you referred to tax committee.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, yes, this was the bill that dealt with redefining the upfront lease payments to MVES. And if you think about it conceptually, Representative Leader, that's precisely what it is.
Yeah.
Precisely what it is.
Yeah. Any additional questions? Representative Abrams, would you like to? Is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak in opposition to this bill / amendment? Seeing none, Representative Abrams.
I'll renew my motion.
Oh, any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. House File 3127, as amended, it will be incorporated into the finance bill. Representative Magnus, I believe that you have House File 3398 having to do with Town Bridge engineering class.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair, and I would move adoption of this bill as an amendment to the House File 3761, but I do have an oral change in that in my motion.
Representative Magnus, if you want to hang on just a second to allow us the opportunity to get these ready to get their bill language. It's House File 3398.
And my oral change in the, would be to delete the new language starting on line 217 through line 220, basically taking out the inflationary factor provision.
And members, you may recall this provision allowed for engineering costs associated with town for that in that tax capacity of less than $200,000, raising that to $300,000. I think the testimony was is that threshold had not been changed for a number of years, and Representative Magnus's oral amendment would delete the automatic inflation factor in that program. Are there any questions on the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to House File 3398 as amended? Any members, are there any questions? Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, is that, did we do his AMD 08 amendment already?
Not yet.
No. Any questions on House File 3398 as amended being incorporated into the omnibus bill? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Representative Magnus, did you want to do...
I'll do the 85 amendment next, Madam Chair, if that's all right with you.
Yep, give us a moment to pull that so we have it in front of us.
I find it myself.
It's way in the very bottom of your staff members. And again, members, on page 1, line 1, we're going to have to change the DE2 to the DE3.
Madam Chair, basically what this allows is allows MnDOT to go in an agreement with Iowa, the state of Iowa, and their transportation department for the construction of a connector highway in southwest Minnesota to not to exceed 4 miles in length.
And Representative Magnus, if you want to explain to the committee, absent this language, what will or won't happen down in southwest Minnesota?
Madam Chair, our long-awaited reconstruction and expansion of Highway 60 would be delayed. This year they're planning to construct a bypass for Highway 60 around the city of Bigelow in the southwest part of the state, and in order to get that done, we need to have language placed in the statutes here that would allow them to go up to 4 miles of construction in the connector highway with Iowa. Iowa's going to be there at the same time. So without this, they won't get the bypass done down there.
All right. Any questions for Representative Magnus? Is anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the A5 amendment? Mr. Barres, do you want to fill in the page and line numbers on line 3 of this amendment, or do you want to do that later?
Madam Chair, members, if I might, I would recommend doing that part later since we've already passed a couple of amendments that have blank page and lines.
All right, thank you. Additional questions? If not, all those in favor of the A5 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A5 amendment is adopted. House File 3745 was a bill of Representative Peterson's. I see that he's in the audience. Is there somebody in the committee that was going to offer that? Representative Earhart, and that would be House File 3745.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm offering that on behalf of Representative Peterson. You guys ready to explain it?
Pardon?
Would you like Representative Peterson to explain this?
Representative Earhart, I bet you can explain it real briefly for the committee, and if we have some real big burning questions, Representative Peterson's in the room to help us out if we need to phone a friend.
Madam Chair, members, the Metropolitan Council makes contact with eligible recipients for financial assistance to transit service within the metropolitan area. And what this amendment is, or this bill is providing, is that transit service, provider of transit service will receive financial assistance from the council through subcontracts. If the subcontractor meets the eligibility requirements of sub 2, and it has been approved by the council, and so forth. So we're extending the contract right to the subcontractors for financial assistance. That be not correct. I can hear from Representative Peterson.
Okay, are there any questions of Representative Earhart? And it's my understanding that my council is neutral on this issue, and I'm looking for a Met Council person, and Mr. Shetland is nodding in the affirmative from the back row. Are there any additional questions? Seeing none, Representative Earhart, would you like to renew your motion?
We're not laying over these things anymore, are we, Madam Chair? We're sticking them in the bill.
Representative Earhart, if you'd like to move inclusion of House File 3745 in the omnibus bill, I think that would be a good thing to do at this point.
Okay, I so move. Thank you.
All right. Any additional questions? Anybody in the audience like to speak in opposition to House File 3745? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right now? Okay, members, I'm going to bring up House File 3482 on behalf of Representative Hackbarth. Unfortunately, I was not in the room when this bill was put forward. I had a bill up in another committee, but you may recall that it dealt with a study and the amount of gas tax revenue that should be dedicated to the all-terrain vehicles. The study showed that 0.27% of the gas sales could be attributed to all-terrain vehicle use based on a 2006 study. This would allow for group to receive the monies that would reflect what was found in the study. It's approximately $600,000 a year in additional funds for the trail all-terrain vehicle account. Representative Hausman, did you have a question?
Are you moving this?
Yes, I am moving this for consideration to be included in the omnibus bill. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And because you then didn't hear the other testimony that day, kinds of numbers that, and I think these were from Mr. Walls, that already we $15.5 million goes to this account. This would be, I think, almost another million. All of the numbers were slightly higher than I think the author had thought that day, unless Mr. Walls has different numbers than we talked about that day. We have always talked about our concern about dollars that continue to leave the Trunk Highway Fund. The testimony that was given that day, and I don't know if I can repeat it, says to take it collectively misunderstands where most of that travel is going, and my understanding was most of it was right on an owner's land. I mean, I think frequently farmers use it as a very convenient thing to use right on their land, and that by far the greatest majority of the miles that they measured were in fact that type of use. and that even some ACV owners are saying it means that the gas I buy, in fact, is going to be used then for a portion, for an activity that I don't participate in. So I think normally the argument is if you have, if you can say this is there's a direct connection, that it seems appropriate then to use it for that purpose. But I think even some ATV owners were saying there isn't a direct connection. I just worry that we continue to lose money from the South Highway Fund, a fairly significant amount.
Thank you, Representative Hoffman. And Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, I'm concerned about that too. With the fact of price going up, I wonder if they're going to be utilizing it as much, and this makes it permanent. My concern was, I think DNR conducted this survey, isn't that correct? I wasn't aware who had this, made this thing, and it's one department taking money from another department. I'm a little reluctant to accept their facts in that one.
Representative Leader, I'm told that it was MnDOT and the DNR, but maybe if we might, maybe we should lay this on the table and see if somebody can find Representative Hackbarth and have him come down and answer your questions, unless there's somebody in the audience that is able to step forward in this. Well, we have a gentleman coming to the stand. This is an ask the audience phase. Welcome to the committee, sir, if you'd like to state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Danger. I work for DNR, Trails and Waterways. And the question?
I think there's a little overview of how the study was conducted, what agencies were involved.
Madam Chair, members, as most of you heard at the last hearing, the legislature mandated DNR, MnDOT, I believe Revenue, to do a study on gas tax. We let a contract out through the University of Minnesota that did the study itself, trying to come up with the gas, the amount of gas used by ATVs.
Representative Hausman, did you have a specific question for the gentleman?
Well, I didn't have a question because I remembered the testimony very well that day, that the opposing testimony was that to collectively use all of those numbers as though there's in fact a direct connection to those ATV owners using those trails, what seemed to be the misunderstanding, that the vast majority of ATV travel, it is, and I wish I brought those numbers today. I didn't realize this issue was going to come up again. It is, in fact, on an owner's land. Farmers frequently use an ATV on their own land for a variety of reasons, and that even some ATV owners were saying to make a direct connection that because I buy the gas for this purpose, it should be used not on roads, but on ATV trails wasn't a direct connection that they wouldn't work that.
Madam Chair, that's, if you read the law or the direction of the legislation, it asked for basically a very simple how much gas is being used by ATVs. The department did go ahead and ask a few other questions basically for our own purposes, which touched upon other areas where they ride. Since the contract ran a little high, we haven't taken those numbers and crunched them per se. So,
Representative Hackbarth, thank you. I know you've had a long day already, and we have some questions on your bill, so we appreciate you coming to our committee. I also see that Assistant Commissioner Holstein's here as well. So,
and Madam Chair, we do have that Director of Trails and Waterways here.
All right. And there is some concern about the study and the percentage of the use that would be attributed to not on trails, but rather farmers that use their ATVs on their own property or running around, and how that was accounted for, or if it's an issue in the percentage, or rather if it's your position that all gas attributed to all ATVs should be put forward to this trail fund.
Madam Chair and members, I think that it's such a small portion that people are using on their own property that I don't know if we can even count.
And Livingston Hackworth, was there some element of the study that would support that being a small percentage of the total use?
I think we'd have to talk to the people that did the study, Madam Chair.
That's what we're trying to get to. It seems to be. All right, thank you. Representative
Earhart. I do not remember that that was a testimony. And if there's anybody in the audience that's in opposition to this, I think you're going to hear a different story. I cannot remember the facts on this, but I know there was quite a bit of consternation.
All right, and we'll try and sort this out. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I think that group is not here because I suspect they didn't know either. But my understanding was that the group that came up and testified critiqued the study and then presented their own work and verified how that study was done. And so we really, that they had conflicting studies.
And Representative Hausman, did they put a percentage of the fuel tax associated with their study, and do you recall what that figure was?
Well, they had three lines, and I may even have it up in my office, I just can't remember, but I thought the first one was a significant number, like 60-70% is on the owner's own land, and then the remaining 15% used in one way and 15% in another. I just can't remember what those second two lines were. But that, as I recall, roughly 70% was on an owner's own land, and then the remaining 30 split between 15-15.
And if I might, Mr. Estenson has a copy of the handout in his bill file, and it talks about analysis of the data from 981 records that contain usable data revealed this breakdown of where ATV riding days are spent, 72% on private lands and trails, 15% on public roads and ditches, and 15% on public lands and trails. And Fisher Holstein, were you here that day that that testimony was given? And if so, can you kind of help us sort this out here?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Mark Holston, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I was not here the day it was in front of this committee, but I have heard several times the testimony from Mr. Larimore, I believe, would have been the individual who testified in front of this committee as to the gas tax and its findings. I think maybe I can clarify a couple things for the committee. As you've heard, the committee or the legislature last session appropriated the agency $75,000 out of the ATV fund to do a gas tax study that hadn't been done since 84. That study followed the same principles and policies that the state of Minnesota has in its public policy towards recreational vehicles, be it snowmobiles, boats, ATVs. We followed that same premise, and the study was conducted in that same way. As an agency, with the conflict of ATV management that the agency has been involved in the last couple of years, and trying to manage a very rapid growing use, we've gone from 12,000-18,000 machines in the 80s to a little over a quarter of a million of machines registered today. So we've seen a massive growth in the sport. We took advantage of that gas tax study and asked and incorporated a series of questions that would help us internally manage, identify areas, identify the use, and be able to make decisions as we move forward in our management strategies and techniques. It was not, those questions were not designed to come in and reevaluate the public policy or get into the public policy of how the gas tax on those machines are being utilized or shifted. We stayed with the same premise that you have laid out on revenues generated by gas tax used by these vehicles would be used for those purposes of education, mandatory education, enforcement, and trail development. And those are the principles in which the document was done. We asked those side questions, again, for our own internal use. We haven't dissected that information yet, so we can't testify to how those numbers worked out by Mr. Larimore or by the other parties as to how they work out. I would caution the committee, if we were going to ask a series of questions to get into the public policy of use on private land versus on public land, I would speculate our set of questions would have looked vastly different to meet that scientific approach as to give you the appropriate information. It wasn't designed. The set of questions were not designed to enter into that debate.
Okay. Any questions of the commissioner, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, listen, you mentioned something about enforcement. Mm-hmm. Dollars for enforcement. Are there dollars now being used for enforcement of ATVs? Because I keep getting phone calls from constituents who ATVs coming across their private property, and he calls the sheriff's office, and there's nobody there, and he calls the DNR, and they don't come, and I'm just wondering what dollars are available.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson.
Senator Holstein.
We in two ways. We have our own enforcement officers that these revenues goes to support conservation officers' work, but then we also provide revenues to your local sheriff. And there's a formula that is set up, and those revenues are sent to your county sheriff, sheriff's office to help your local unit of government in its enforcement efforts on top of ours. So if you're asking for revenues, we are spending $1.7 million on ATV enforcement between the state and grants to local units of government, county sheriffs.
Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Holson, $1.7 million divided by 87 counties?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson.
This is Goldstein.
That is what we are concentrating on, just ATV use on our enforcement.
Did I hear that right?
Okay, thank you.
Representative
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, I believe the sheriff's portion of that is provided by grants.
Yes, correct.
By grants. So they would request the money, and then the DNR gives it out in the form of grants. So not all counties are going to be requesting grants all the time. Well, it's not like we're dividing that money up against all the counties. The counties request the grant, and then they give out the grant. And so that's how it works with the counties and local units of government.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Holston, and not that this directly affected, assuming this is going to go, how do you pay for restoration? We allow them to go and trunk highway right away. Is there a restoration? Is that covered by MnDOT, or do you participate in restoring some of the damage?
Mr. Holstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, there is a damage account that is set up in the ATV fund for damage caused by ATV use that private citizens or local units of government can come in and petition or request access into those revenues for restoration. I don't know if it's been used for ditch maintenance. I don't know if it has been for that. There has been some? Mr. Chair, Representative Reeder, I've been informed that there has been some.
Holstein.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Come to my attention that there has been some access into that account for county repair.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I shouldn't do this, but Commissioner Holstein, is that account, are you getting requests for access? Or a lot of the repairs are not being done. What I'm concerned about, we're talking about trunk highway dollars here again. If we're taking that out and trunk highway isn't getting reimbursed, basically for a lot of the, I presume there's damage, some of the testimony we've seen and pictures that we've seen, that maybe your account isn't large enough and you don't repay it all? or you don't cover it all?
We never run out of money.
Do we have more receipts, more requests than we do this year?
Commissioner Holstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader. The local unit of government has to go through a formal process of shutting the roads down, the ditches. The county has the authority to control riding within those ditches currently. Some counties have chosen to shut that activity down. Most have not. So that affects how many opportunities there are to access into the fund. I believe there is a surplus in the fund at this time.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Representative Housen.
Madam Chair, just to add to that discussion, that particular day, I referenced the article that had just been in the paper about Washington County. And I mean, right now we have DNR up here, but we really should have county engineers here, because what I have heard in counties is it is really the county tax, the property taxpayers, who are bearing the brunt. And Washington County had determined not to allow riding in ditches. A year later, I think it was, they went back to, because for them, they were repairing the damage, and among other things, one was the erosion in the ditches, but the other is they're designed in such a way to minimize damage to a car that might go through. Once you have ruts, that design is interfered with, and they determined they couldn't keep repairing, and so they said no riding in ditches, and a year later they reaffirmed that decision because of really the amount of money they were saving in not repairing.
All right. Is there any additional questions for the people at the stand? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to House File 3482 being included in the omnibus bill? Representative Housen.
If we're going to vote, Madam Chair, what I would just ask us to think about is the timing of this. This year, we aren't quite out of the woods yet, and you got very tiny little targets. There is not, we are not putting a lot of new money into any endeavor. And so I would just question, in a year when we're still not quite reversing ourselves on cuts in a wide variety, whether it really is the year to put new money into this one without, again, measuring it against all those other needs. So my argument this year would be one of kind of timing and priorities in a year when we haven't quite yet turned the corner and there's not much new money on the table.
All right. Thank you for those comments. Any additional comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of including House File 3482 in the omnibus bill say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hackbar. All right, members, is there anybody else that have amendments or bills they want to offer to the omnibus bill? Representative Hornstein.
I have an H3761A6 amendment, which I have a witness who can speak very, very briefly about that, if it would be appropriate, Madam Chair. This is a transportation study.
And was that included before 3 o'clock yesterday, Representative Hornstein?
If it was in the afternoon, it may not have made the 3 p.m., but I know it came in the afternoon, sometime late in the afternoon.
All right, and I'm trying to find that. Is it a bill or is it actually an amendment?
It's an amendment. 3761A6.
Okay. Oh, the A6 amendment. All right. Thank you. I see that. Representative Hornstein.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I have former Speaker Long is here and brought this to my attention. I think this is a very straightforward request of MnDOT. Basically to collate a lot of the information that they have already into a study that can really get at our long-term needs. We've had issues like the crosstown, and there was some last-minute money transferring going on, and you know, a number of examples where, you know, if we had, you know, some kind of a study where the legislature could see really side by side, here's the money, here are the projects, here are the needs, you know, it would make, I think, all of our lives a little easier. And my understanding is when you look at, excuse me for my cold, if you look at, you know, items 1, 2, 3, and 4, all of this information, it's my understanding, you know, MnDOT already has, so it's not really doing a lot of additional research. I would certainly give MnDOT the benefit of the doubt on number 5, lines 18 through 20. That might be, be a new issue for them, and, you know, if we need to delete that, we will. But I think everything else should be, you know, pretty much already in their hands. So it's really, you know, collating the information in a usable form so we would know exactly what we're doing in terms of the needs and the funding. And I don't know if Ms. Long would want to comment very briefly on that, Madam Chair. That might be helpful.
All right, thank you. Ms. Long, if you'd like to speak to the A6 amendment, please step forward and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Members. D. Long, Minnesotans for an Energy Efficient Economy. This amendment really results from a conversation that I was having late last week with two members of the opposite body, one Democrat, one Republican, and they were talking about their need for information and the ability to look at a longer range picture in planning for the state's transportation needs. And I asked me if I could get something put together, and I did. But essentially, it's things that if the Department of Transportation does not have this information, one would wonder why they don't, by and large. But it's something that I think needs to be presented in a form to decision makers so they can easily absorb it and use it.
And Chair, and I also realize under on line 24, again, being deferential and giving the benefit of the doubt to MnDOT, if that's too soon, certainly we could go later in the calendar year of 2007 or make that January 12, 2008. So, I mean, I really think that with the exception of lines 18 through 20 and that effective date, again, as Ms. Long said, I think all of this information should be pretty readily available, you know, in the agency yet now.
Who's funding? All right. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to have either Ms. Parker or somebody from DOT comment on the amendment.
Ms. Parker. And Representative Hornstein, I'm assuming that you'd like to change line 1 from the DE2 to the DE3 amendment.
Correct.
And incorporate that. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Parker.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bessie Parker from MnDOT. Well, we've been looking at this in the audience and talking about it, and we think that we have already done 1, 2, and 3, and... there's a lot of work going on at the national level, both at ASHTO and the Transportation Research Board, which is part of the National Academy of Sciences. I believe in the Transportation Reauthorization Bill that Congress just passed, they directed the U.S. Department of Transportation to do some studies. I can't remember exactly what they were, but that were in the direction of looking at how transportation will be funded in the future as the means of funding or the means of propelling vehicles changes in the future. And so it may be that some of this might be duplicative, and what we would be inclined to do, I think, would be to pull together a literature search and identification of other places where this is being done on a broader basis than just Minnesota. I think with respect to number 6, we would not feel comfortable making recommendations of options for road pricing. That's a very significant policy issue for the legislature. We have been participating in a study that was funded by a group of states looking at the issue of distance pricing, and some people think we shouldn't have been doing that because they don't like the idea. Some people think it's necessary to look at everything that might come in the future. So we might wish to be relieved of the burden of making recommendations and simply be asked to identify options that others are studying or something. Maybe if this goes in, we could talk about some language.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I mean, I think I completely agree with Ms. Parker. I mean, maybe the language would be identification of options rather than recommending. I'd be very comfortable with that language.
And so, Representative Hornstein, are you moving on line
1? I'll do an oral amendment on the
recommendation
and add identification.
Identify options.
Your identify options for our pricing.
So, members, if I might, line 21, it would delete recommendation of, insert identify.
Correct.
Representative Hausman.
And Madam Chair and Ms. Parker, presumably when asked to make a study, if in fact that work is already done, you don't duplicate it, but report on, I mean, in a sense that becomes a reporting on current information, but not duplicating what you've already studied.
Ms. Parker.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, we would not want to duplicate anything that's being done, and we probably would want to start something that would have the potential for duplicating a larger national effort that's probably looking toward eventual recommendations to Congress, because no one state can address road pricing options by itself because so much traffic is interstate, so it's really a national issue, and it is an issue that everyone in transportation recognizes is necessary to be addressed these days.
And Representative Hornstein, I know that you've been real easy to work with in these studies and working things with MnDOT, and I guess I would just ask if you would be flexible in working with MnDOT and maybe cleaning up some of the language modifying it so that we can, to the degree that we can, use what MnDOT already does and not have to spend additional resources to put it in some kind of a form dictated by this. We've got some time. This bill's going to probably have a very crooked path to the floor. And so if we, with your assurances that you'd work with MnDOT to try and minimize the cost to the department, I think we'd appreciate that.
Madam Chair, absolutely. And I'll just say that you know, I'm committed to seeing this through and working cooperatively with MnDOT. And I think when I spoke with Ms. Long about it, what was, you know, very appealing to me was just to get this information in a user-friendly way so that when we reconvene, you know, we'll have this out in front of us and we'll be able to really, you know, match the need with the funding and I think from a policy-making perspective, you know, make things a little easier. So, you know, with that, I certainly, you know, give my commitment to work cooperatively and again, not to duplicate things and not to add expensive new charges to the agency, but just to I guess the word we used, Ms. Long and I used, was to collate some of this existing information and have it ready for us. So thank you very much, Ms. Parker and Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Is anybody that would like to speak in opposition to the A6 amendment as amended? Seeing none, Representative Hornstein.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, I don't know if I'm going to speak in opposition to this, but I want to tell you that anybody that's been involved with the transportation system in this state knows that almost every one of these things is available. The problem is that nobody pays any attention to them. I mean, MnDOT knows that we're short $1 billion a year to keep our highway system running. The administration must know it if they read, the Commissioner of Transportation must know it if she reads the literature and what the department tells them, but nobody pays any attention. Here we are screwing around with $2.5 billion worth of bonding when we need $1 billion a year by everybody that reads anything about transportation knows that. Now, why do we have to go through this exercise again? How about a bill that makes the administration do what has to be done to make the transportation system whole in this state? How about a bill that takes the members of the legislature to the point where they do what's necessary, and that's vote on new money? That's what's needed. And I'd be happy to have another study here that collects everything in one place, and we'll know exactly what we know now. We're not doing the job.
Okay. And Representative Earhart, we have heard your frustrations before, and we appreciate you sharing them again. Are there any other comments on A6 amendment? Representative Hornstein.
Very quickly. Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I mean, I completely agree with you, but, again, if the issue is having the information accessible and calling attention to some of those questions, maybe this is what the study can do. So I want the information in a user-friendly way that's out there, collated, and we can work with it. So with that, we can
move on. All right, without any further discussion, Representative Hornstein renews his motion that the A6 amendment as amended be incorporated into the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A6 amendment as amended is adopted. Members, I'm going to take House File 3276 off the table. That would be the Pete Nelson bill as amended for consideration for inclusion in the omnibus bill. The finance part of this involves a fee of $300 for an annual permit to be deposited to the Trunk Highway Fund to allow for towing in emergency situations of heavy weight. Are there any questions on the 3276 as amended? Anybody in the audience likes to speak in opposition to that? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 3276 as amended be recommended to be included in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the 08 amendment up for inclusion in our bill. Remember, that's the Railroad Improvement Service Improvement Program on granting.
Remember, that's be near the bottom of your stack of handouts in your blue file. Jose Magna.
Madam Chair, I have John Appitz up here to testify on the bill. If you, John, would care to testify.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Appitz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. This is a great idea, Madam Chair. I can leave it at that. I'm not sure how much you want.
We have some discussion, given that we saw the chair of the bonding bill actually do earmarks for the Railroad Service Improvement Fund this year, so we didn't know if this was necessary, if it had been... has it had enough input, and certainly I don't oppose putting this in the bill. I think we're, moving towards some type of flexibility in that funding source. I don't know if it has the ability to put any of your earmarked funding at risk in the bonding bill or not, but certainly it'd be up to the will of the committee whether or not they want to include this in the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair, let me just say thank you for the time and attention that Representative Magnus and yourself, Madam Chair, have given to this particular program. We haven't had this much attention in a long time, and it's much appreciated. And the provision which would allow a mechanism to deal with what the bonding committee actually is doing. The bonding committee, there's identical language in both of the bills specifying a couple of grants to railroads, one in Glencoe to deal with a congestion situation there, and then a redevelopment between Gibbon and Norwood down in what's called the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority, the Minnesota Prairie Line. And this would, in fact, provide a mechanism, a legislative guidance on how to expend those funds should they come to pass in the bonding bill. I think it's a good idea. There have been authority for grants to be made for some time, back going back to 1976, in that particular statute. It's never been used. It's always been a revolving loan program. But I think that this would kind of help with the shift in paradigm that we're seeing in railroads today, moving just from preserving and protecting short lines that are being abandoned into a new era where these might be used more as economic development tools. So, simply stated, we've had some discussions with the Department of Transportation. You may wish to work with or discuss this with them. But this works for railroads that need some assistance, and we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Apitz. Any questions of Representative Magnus or Mr. Apitz? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the 08 amendment? Any questions from committee members? Representative Magnus.
Madam Chair, I would move that we adopt the D08 amendment included into the House File 3761.
All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. All right, members, I'm not sure what we have left. Does anybody have any amendments that they've been waiting to offer that we haven't addressed yet?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Now, just looking at this this last one that Representative Magnus moved, I'm just wondering if we could substitute bus lines for private bus lines someplace where we could just...
No. I like railroads, Mr. Chair. Love them.
Well, I just thought it would be a thought.
I don't think we want to go there, Representative Anderson. All right. The next item would be... the A15 amendment. And members, this was brought to me this morning from the Department of Public Safety, and if Mr. Wiggins or Ms. McCormick would like to come to the stand to explain the amendment to the committee.
Madam Chair, did you say 15 or 16?
I'm sorry, the AMD 15 amendment. I think it was passed out at the start of the committee hearing as opposed to being within your yellow file, or I'm sorry, blue file folder. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please. And I haven't even had an opportunity to read the note that you sent me a half hour ago or whatever, so you're going to have to explain the whole thing to all of us all at once.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Pat McCormick. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And with me is David Skillbred, the Bankers Association and the Independent Bankers Community Association met with the department and explained the fact that a little-known amendment in our bill last year that allowed liens to expire after 7 years had some unintended consequences to the bankers. And I'll let the Bankers Association representatives explain it. But after our discussion, we agreed the main reason that we had asked that after 7 years a lien would expire was because we had found that after 7 years, the only way that people would usually be able to cancel the lien or be able to sell a vehicle if they didn't have the lien release available or be able to contact the lien holder would be to have to go to court to get that changed. And we felt that that was an extreme measure and that this would allow them to be able to easily sell their vehicle or transfer the title. And so that was our reasoning for the change, but there were some concerns that were expressed by the Bankers Association's representatives. So this language that we have is a compromise, and we agree that it still gets at the issue our concern was, but also addresses the Banker Association representatives, so maybe I can let them talk first, and then we can explain the amendment.
And then, Ms. McCormick, I'm sorry it's a little chaotic putting these bills together. I understand that you need an oral amendment to the A15.
Yes.
And would you like to tell me what that would be at this time?
The oral amendment that we're suggesting would be on line 6 of the amendment, to delete the word expires and instead use the words may be canceled. So it would say a security interest perfected under this chapter may be canceled 7 years from the perfection date.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, sir. So state your name for the record, please.
My name is David Stilbert, Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers in Minnesota. Madam Chair, thank you for this time. I'd like to thank the department for working with us these last 3 weeks on this compromised language. As the department stated, they had some very legitimate concerns that they were trying to respond to. The language passed last year, however, was a very significant change to a longstanding policy and would have required financial institutions to create a very complex and costly new tracking system to track all of the liens on all vehicles to ensure that they would know when that seventh year came up and then extend them per the policy of the request if necessary. I think the compromise before you narrows the scope of the language so that it addresses the concerns of public safety without being too burdensome on the lender, on the lenders.
Do you like to add additional testimony? Okay, you're here for questions. Any questions of Ms. McCormick or the gentleman from the bankers? Is there anybody in the audience would like to speak in opposition to the AMD 15 amendments? And members, again, the verbal or oral amendment to this amendment would be on line 6. Delete the word expires and insert may be canceled. And I'd like to incorporate that into the amendments. No additional questions or comments? All those in favor of the A15 amendment as as amended, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say the A15 amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Members, are there any other amendments to... I can't even remember what the House file number is anymore. Representative Larson.
Madam Chair, I don't have an amendment, but I just wanted to inquire if Representative Saylor had a chance to visit with you about the identification card issue and just if we're going to continue to work on that.
She did, and I appreciate asking. Unfortunately, I did get down here at 12:59, and I wanted to start my meeting at 1 o'clock, so I told her I would speak with her later. I did speak with Mr. Wiggins this morning from DPS. He assured me that he would get with Representative Saylor, that I would then receive the language that everybody's agreed to. There's been some different versions floating around, and I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. We have two options for moving that language. One, either being on this bill at a later stop, we can certainly amend it, or in the Senate, that language is in the data practices bill, which I am also carrying, and would be happy to carry the language there as well.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, you were asking about other amendments?
Yes.
We have an A2 amendment in our file. That's left. I don't know.
The A2 amendment?
I don't know what it is.
Representative Leader, that has to do with truck weights and was put in the amendment in the packet, but my understanding is the person who had that prepared no longer wants to offer it. If there's somebody on the committee that wants to offer that, they're certainly more than welcome to.
Third reading.
All right. Any additional amendments? All right, members, thank you. We went very efficiently today, and I appreciate that. So what we have before us now is House File 3761 as amended. And if there's anybody in the audience who would like to speak for or against House File 3761 as amended, please let me know. Raise your hand. All right, members, is there anybody in the... Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, was the Vandiver bill going to be put into this amendment?
Anderson, there was not a fiscal consideration for that. I'd like to move this bill and finish it, and then I'm going to ask for a brief recess. I haven't had the opportunity to speak with Representative Vandiver, given we're putting together an omnibus bill, but we'll have about a 10 or 15-minute recess and then come back and try and address the Vandiver bill at that time.
Very good.
Any additional questions? If not, I would like to renew my motion that House File 3761, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much, members. And the committee will sit... Mr. Barrett.
Madam Chair, members, I would recommend that, just to be clear, to that both the reviser and I have authority to arrange all of the amendments that have been passed in the proper form.
And Representative Abrams?
Well, Madam Chair, at least in the Tax Committee, that's normally part of the motion, that whatever technical changes have to be made, and usually I know you're new in house research. Normally, if you have a question, you go to the committee chair and the amendment author. If it becomes a major issue, then we'll go to other members of the committee, but you have the authority to do what's necessary.
But I think that a lot of these amendments have on the bottom of them to renumber and sequence accordingly, and certainly I think that we would expect, given the nature of how we put this bill together, that there would be some fitting in the pieces, if you will, so that it makes sense. Any additional questions on that issue of it? I'm sorry, what's that, Reader?
Some of these bills that don't have numbers on, like the aeronautics bill that Representative Beard had, is that incorporated in the...
No, it is not. We did not have any money in our target.
So that isn't yet reached?
No. When we talked about putting together this omnibus bill, we told committee members that we'd make copies of all the bills that were laid on the table, and so we provided copies of everything so that members would be aware of what was still before the committee.
That's why the bills are here, Amina.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that anybody might offer them any of those amendments if they wanted to. All right, well, members, we're going to take a 15-minute recess until 3:20. Committee's in recess. All right, members, I'm going to call back to order the Transportation Finance Committee meeting for April 11th and take off the table House File 3805, which is Representative Vanderveer's bill that would provide for memorial signs on the 35W, 35E, and 35 interstate. We have here with us also Ms. Parker from MnDOT. My understanding is that they have reached an agreement to have a total of 4 signs. I don't know if there's a particular line on the A2 amendment that you'd like to delete. President Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe line 111 and 112.
And members, I would make an oral amendment to the A2 amendment to delete lines 11 and 12 of page 1. And I think then we also have to, on line 10, delete the semicolon and the and replace that with the period as well. And an exclamation mark. Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, members, I would also recommend adding and to the end of line 8, since number 4 would then be the last one.
All right, members, that would be on line 8. Add the word and following the semicolon. Line 10, delete the semicolon, the and put in the quotation mark, and delete lines 11 and 12. And if I might then, if we could adopt the A2 amendment, as I believe this is a compromise between MnDOT and Representative Vanderveer, is that correct? Ms. Parker?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Betsy Parker from MnDOT, that is correct. This is a compromise.
And Representative Vanderveer?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is a compromise.
All right, thank you very much for your efforts. All those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A2 amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Vanderveer, in talking with members of the committee, certainly there is great sympathy and concern for the loss of life and the situation that your community faced and law enforcement, and would like a way to recognize it. In addition, there is concern about putting memorial signs on interstates, the precedents that this would set, safety issues. This is one of those situations that I'll speak for myself as a legislator, and I'm assuming that some members at the table here would agree with me that we feel like we're between a rock and a hard spot. We want to be good public policy makers and try and protect the integrity of our interstate system and not start a precedence that, not knowing where it ends up, if this is the case for every fallen officer or other local heroes that have situations that occur on the interstate system, we could in short order be in a position where we might have to face taking some down, and I think many of us are much more comfortable with the option that we worked out for Ted Foss, where there's a nice memorial sign that people can read the story, the history of the individual, and feel that may be more meaningful for individuals, and would certainly hope that maybe that might be considered in this case. But that given the fact that MnDOT has stated that this is a compromise and it's something that you would like as well, I think we're going to move this along. I would like to change my amendment that this bill be moved without recommendation to the General Register. We know you, Representative Vandeveer, you're very relentless in pursuing your legislation here at the Capitol. It's we feel strongly that whether we move this bill or you have a floor amendment, this issue will likely be decided by the entire House, and with that, I'll be happy to move this without recommendation to the floor. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, I think I made a motion for an amendment, and I don't know that that was ever voted on.
And Representative Earhart, I am so sorry. With everything that we went through this afternoon, I lost track of that, and certainly you did make that motion, and we're looking for some language to put that into the bill, and I don't know if we've complicated things by the fact that we've amended the A2 amendment and adopted, but Mr. Bress, did you have a recommendation? I think your intent was to allow one sign instead of four. Is that correct?
At the point of incident.
Right.
Madam Chair, members, I did have a recommendation for language. This is what's written against the original bill, so it doesn't yet take into account the new language, the new amendment that was just adopted.
I didn't get the new amendment. What's the new amendment?
Representative Earhart, it was the A2 amendment as amended, which would allow for four signs instead of five. The original bill, I believe, was six signs.
Okay. Well, when I made my amendment, wasn't it to the amendment as adopted?
We had not adopted the A2 amendment at the time that you had made your motion to go down to one sign at the site of the incident.
Well, whatever, Madam Chair, I just think it's wrong to do what we're doing here, and I very much appreciate the widow's feelings and that sort of thing. But that doesn't mean that when I think it's wrong, I'm not going to speak up about it, so whatever the hell you want to do with my amendment, I don't care. I just think it's the wrong policy for us to be adopting four signs or whatever, and one sign, that's a beautiful memorial to that other officer that we looked at pictures of, as far as I'm concerned. And that's one.
Representative Earhart, it's not my call on what to do with your oral amendment. That's going to have to be your call on whether or not you want to pursue an oral amendment to allow for one sign or not.
Well, ma'am, sure. I think if we put one sign on here and Representative Vandeveer wants to come in with 10 signs on the House floor, that's his option.
And so
we ought to make good policy here, Madam Chair.
I appreciate that, and I think I've expressed my discomfort with this situation already. And so Representative Earhart would like to move an amendment that would specify one sign at the site of the incident. Mr. Bress.
Madam Chair, members, the amendment that I have written so far is as follows. On page 1, line 19, delete erect suitable signs at the following and insert erect a suitable sign on southbound marked Interstate Highway 35W within 300 feet of the location at which Officer Silvera was killed in the line of duty on September 6, 2005. Subject to section 161.139. That's largely the same language, by the way, as what is on page 2, lines 1 to 3. Also in the amendment is deleting page 1, deleting lines 20 to 22, and on page 2, deleting lines 1 to 5.
So, members, I think that because the A2 amendment amended everything after the amendments, in the A2 amendment, the language was on lines 119 and later. I think that we can accomplish the same thing by the amendment that you just stated orally, even though we've amended the original bill.
Madam Chair, members, I believe so.
All right. Members, to be clear, the Earhart oral amendment would allow for one sign at the site of the incident, which I believe is on southbound 35 south of the intersection with Trunk Highway 97. Is that correct?
That's what it looks like. No. It would be north of Trunk Highway 23, I believe. And maybe that is kind of the same thing, except okay. I think there's quite a space between them. So
okay.
I think it would be...
President Vander, I think that we could have, if this amendment does pass, as we could have clarifying language adopted at the next stop.
Okay.
Did you want to speak to the Earhart amendment?
I do, members, and I would tell you I've learned a lot here with this bill, and I do appreciate the concerns that you have. However, we did go back with the family, work out this four signs, and did all that, and my biggest regret is they asked if they should come today or if they could, and a number of people did, and I told them not to because, you know, I was asked not to, and this isn't your fault or anybody's fault, but I wish that if we were substantially changing it, that they could be here and they could have told their story. It's going to be hard for me to go back there and do it. And Representative Earhart, I think if this gets to the floor and if it's there, I mean, you could certainly make this amendment, you know, at that point, but at least it wouldn't be when they're not here today. And so that would, you know, that would be my request. And MnDOT has stated that this, they are committed to this, that this is a good, well, that this is something that, you know, they feel is reasonable. I think is that accurate? Well, no.
All right. Any additional questions on the Earhart oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Nay. The amendment is not adopted. All right, members, we have the House File 3805 as amended with a motion to pass to the General Register without recommendation. Any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Representative Vanderveer, thank you. We are sorry that you had to sit here for 2 hours and wait this out.
Not a problem.
We're certainly appreciative that you did so.
Thank you.
All right, members, just in brief, I've had a good time being the chair of this committee. We've certainly had our ups and downs. My special thanks to Ms. Lott, Mr. Estenson, Mr. Walls, and Mr. Burris for their service to the committee, Ms. Kodarek and Mr. Kane, kind of the silent support staff on either side, but certainly on many instances I've recognized both of you staff members helping members on the other side of the aisle, and I appreciate the fact that this committee, unlike others, seems to be able to work well together and avoid some of the nastiness that we've seen in other committees. And as chair of the committee, I just want to express my gratitude for that from the committee members, because for the most part, it's been a pleasure serving as chair of this committee over the last 2 years, so thank you. And,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Abrams, I certainly hope we have a couple of them, but I feel like this is the last time that this committee may be together as a committee group, and just wanted to share those thoughts with you. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to thank you and the rest of the members of this committee. This will be the last time I'll be on this committee, and I've been on this committee.
Don't make this vote on that when you can.
The emotions will get me.
But this is a committee that I've been on since my first day in the legislature, and have learned a lot from all the members that have served on this, and so it's been a pleasure as well for me.
All right, and best wishes
to you,
Representative Larson, and hopefully we don't see each other cross each other in the conference committee. You could do it
You know, I like Representative Larson so much that if it will help you, Representative Larson, I'll endorse you for your new quest, and if it will help you more, I'll endorse your opponent.
Madam Chair, the most important endorsement I could have gotten, I got on Saturday.
I'm the first ballot, I might add. So, any additional comments or business to come before the Transportation Finance Committee? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned.